Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the nation's rising young rural poor when we come back. If you've got a lot, 50 by 100 feet with 2,000 square foot house on it, you've got space for 6 raised beds that contain 2,400 square feet. That's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of 5 or 6 will eat in an entire year. And you can do it in the middle of a city just as easily as you can out in the country. Now, the idea that you are trapped in the city and cannot provide for yourself and your family because of a space limitation is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, plow, or a harrow. A shovel, a rake, and a hoe is more in line with what we need for an urban French intensive culture farm. We don't need acres, combines, or price supports. We need pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got 2,400 square feet or a backyard big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family on your own ground. Now, you need open pollinated seeds designed to answer the problems that we encounter when we're dealing with feeding ourselves as opposed to going to the grocery store to be fed. Now, it has space-saving vegetables, so you need less land, less fertilizer, less water, less mulch, and less work. It's been designed with immediate food availability. You know, you're only 28 days from seed to salad. 28 days. And it has flowers to attract wild pollinators because of the loss of our honeybee population to chemical sprays and disease. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining, and it's, best of all, free of charge. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available in compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Alright, last time we were talking about, I got cut off because I went overtime on last night's broadcast. Couldn't add up, I guess, the segments. But we were talking in the last segment last night about the rural poor seen in Mississippi, down in the Mississippi Delta. 48 of 50 counties with the highest child poverty rate in rural America. It's an article here, I think, that came from the Agribusiness Examiner. Let's see if I'm right. Yeah, it's the Agribusiness Examiner. And during that segment last night, I said, you know, if you've got average intelligence and if you're willing to get out and work, if you're working for less than $100,000 a year, you're wasting your time. I can teach anybody of average intelligence that wants to work. You got that? If you want to work and you've got average intelligence, I can teach anybody to make $100,000 a year. In fact, if you can get to zero COD, and that's the big rub. You know, most of the people that come to school, I've got people that walk in my door, come to school here, and they make lots of money, but they've got lots of debt. They can't service their debt. They're actually bankrupt. When I was a kid, if a guy was poor, but he was free and clear, he was better off. He was looked up to and thought more highly of than a guy that had $20,000 or $30,000, lived in a nice house, drove a new car, and was in debt. Debt's your enemy, not your friend. But in America, the blacks, Hispanics, and other minorities have bought into the government's story, the government's policy of, I'm a victim, and I'm a victim, and it's the fault of everybody else in the world but me as to why I'm poor. Let me tell you a little story. If you're poor, you're poor because you break the law. You're not practicing those 15 laws that God has set into play, or set into motion, 16 maybe, 15 or 16 laws that deal with economics. You're paying interest and usury. Now, I once worked for an old guy named Frank Rocha, dead now, been dead for many years, probably 30 years or more. And old Frank, when I met him, I was 15 years old. He was an old man. He said he's 55 years old. It was 1955. He made a statement to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, you know, if you went back to Portugal, where I'm from, you would starve to death. You couldn't make it there because it's so tough, so hard. I'm going to read you a little story here, and I want you to remember that Frank Rocha said to me, age 15, he said, now you Americans are so soft, indolent, and weak that if you went to the Azores Islands where I come from, you'd starve to death. He said, I never wore shoes until I was 17 years old. He was totally uneducated. He never went to school a day in his life. He owned a dairy farm in Lolita, California on Cannibal Road, Lighthouse Road they called it. Lighthouse Road. Old Frank lived on the Herrick place. It was 240 acres and Frank had 140 cows, 40 heifers, 40 calves, three or four bulls, a couple of pigs, dog or two. He came to the United States with $5 in his pockets, got off the boat in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Went out to Lolita, California in 1922. When he died in 1970, he owned it all and had $1 million in the bank. How did he do that? How did he do that? Foreigners come to the United States, I mean people that are just destitute, and make it big. Make $1 million or more. We think of sports stars signing $20 million a year contracts. We think of Donald Trump. We think of people that are in the news, like a Dan Rather who signs a $7 million contract with CBS. You know, he gets millions of dollars a year, you know, for doing that program. And we say, well, that's a fluke. You know, I probably couldn't do that. In my lifetime, I've run across probably 30 or 40 men that I've done business with, that I have rubbed elbows and shoulders with, that started out poor. I mean, they're just poor as a church mouse. Let's take Sam Walton, raised during the Depression years, dirt poor, creates the Walmart company. Henry Ford only went to the sixth grade. Thomas Edison only went to the third grade. Never had a college degree in engineering. Henry Ford didn't. Neither did Thomas Edison. And yet they made millions. Colonel Sanders didn't get started in life until he was 65, at least in his business career, and neither did J.C. Penney, 65, both of them, before they made a hit in their business careers. How do these poor people get out there, hustle a buck, and make it big, and Americans, by the droves and scores and the millions, and by their millions, turn inward and lament? Constantly, you hear these laments. Oh, woe is me. I'm just a poor black guy. I'm just a poor immigrant. Don't talk too good English. And I came from Mexico and I can't make it. So I'm going to join a street gang and go out and rape, rob, and pillage, which ends you up in prison and you end up a total failure in life. Now listen to this. The abandoned shells of buildings along the main drag in Coahoma, Mississippi, serve as a glum backdrop for the youngsters who sit in front of them for hours, idly chatting. I'm going to underline that. Here it is. Youngsters who sit in front of these stores for hours, idly chatting. Do you think there's any money to be made sitting around, idly chatting? Mull that one over for a minute. If I just sit here in front of the store chatting with you, do you think I'm going to get rich or poor? And staring into the occasional passing car, a liquor store and a convenience store are the only places to shop. The little work available is seasonal are at casinos 25 miles away. Now, you know, throughout my life, I've heard of people that went out and did something different. I mean, you know, there's people that come from poor places. Mark Twain, Jack London, a whole host and plethora of people that left where it was that they were located. People that left Ireland and came to the United States in the potato famine. People that left Europe because of political oppression or religious oppression, left everything behind, came to America and made a good living, made a mark in life. Do you think that they were sitting around idly chatting? Is that the key to success? Idly chatting and looking into the occasional empty cars that drives down the street. You know, poverty, like annoying out-of-town cousins, has settled into this Mississippi Delta town for an extended stay. 55% of households in this community of 350 take in less than $15,000 a year. I mentioned last night, if I didn't get cut off yet, I have never made $15,000 a year. I'm 65 years old. I haven't made $15,000. I can't think of any year that I did. Now, that's in wages, salaries, tips, commissions, and gifts. Now, I've been around for a while, and I've made a lot of money. I usually take my money in the form of property. Now, I got a lot of cows, land, sheep, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. I kind of avoid dollars. There's no money in dollars, so I stay away from them. So these people are making less than $15,000 a year. I'm going to tell you why there's no money in dollars. That's well below the federal poverty line of $18,850. I'm going to underline that. $18,850 is called the poverty line for a family of four. The last of the town shacks, which lacked toilets and insulation, were retired only in the last decade after Habitat for Humanity made destroying them a priority. Here's the Habitat for Humanity came in and destroyed all the shacks. Well, let me tell you, I'm married to a woman, and she lived in the house right up the hill from our house right here. Now I got three bathrooms in this house, but in that house, in 1970, she moved here, bought this farm in 1969. In 1972, she moved into the big house. But for 3 years, she lived in that house up there, and there was no bathroom. In fact, the house was never built with a bathroom. They used an outhouse. These people that are living in this little town, what do they call it? Coahoma, Mississippi. I'll bet you that all of those people have automobiles, television sets, and cable TV. I'll just bet you. Okay, I don't have cable TV, and I don't have air conditioning. I don't have cable TV, and I don't have air conditioning. And I've been around for a long time. I've never owned a new car, and if I live to be 110, I'm never going to. It's bad business, and it's a bad investment. So if the Detroit car makers are waiting for George Gordon to come up and buy a new car, they're all going to starve to death. And, you know, I'm not complaining about OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, the IRS, or anybody else. I live a lifestyle of at least $100,000 a year. That's the top 5% of the people of America. I teach a law school and I teach business, and I can teach you how to make $100,000 a year, each and every year. And I've told every student that ever walked in my door, if you're making less than $100,000 a year, you're wasting your time. The median average wage in America today is $41,000 U.S. paper dollars. $41,000 U.S. paper dollars. I don't make $41,000 U.S. paper dollars, but I have all the things that money can buy that's worth $100,000 of those paper dollars a year, and I avoid those dollars like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. And that's because there's no profit in it. These people are poor because they violate the law of God. In fact, the entire nation of the United States is poor. We owe, that is, 275 million of us Americans owe $149 trillion. That's right. We owe $149 trillion. We haven't got a prayer of ever paying it off. Hang on. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on the Internet, worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law. I want to emphasize business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Let me emphasize business law and business law and biblical law, because I'm going to show you why this law is so important to generating money, getting out of poverty. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals and by prearrangement only. If you want to know more, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? That's georgegordon.org on the Internet. Click onto the email and send me an email request or call direct 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. You know, there's an old adage that goes like this. Gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter, the currency of peasants. And credit and debt is the currency of slaves. Americans use credit and debt, and we've been put into credit debt slavery. Back in 1900, Americans had wealth. Today, Americans have poverty and debt. A man who has a nice house and a fine car and a debt is poverty stricken. And when the collapse comes, which they inevitably do, these people would be wiped out. A poor guy down in the Mississippi Delta that owns a few acres of ground and owns it, notice owns it, and knows how to work it, is going to be miles ahead of some guy in the suburbs of Dallas with all of his cars and all of his debt and all of his mortgages and payments. Listen, when you're making payments, interest, using unjust weights and balances and depend upon credit, poverty is the certain result. Blacks in America were better off in 1900 than they are today. They were economically, as a class of people, more financially secure than they are today. They have bought into this woe is me. Bill Cosby lambasted them not too long ago. He said, listen, quit feeling sorry for yourselves. Get an education, get out and go to work, and you can make it. You can make it big. But listen, there's a policy in America that is designed to keep blacks and Hispanics and other minorities poor. It's government policy. I've been doing it for years. Been doing it for at least a century. The Indians of America, the Native Americans, are all poor. Most of them are just poor, living on the reservation, starving to death, ignorant, can't read and write, don't know how to make money. And it's because they violate the laws of God. And we threw the Bible out of the public schools. The last thing that your government's ever going to let you learn is the laws of God and the economic laws that would make you self-sufficient, independent, and wealthy. The government is never going to let you get out of that poverty hole. And as long as you continue to buy into the government's paper money, credit cards, interest, stocks, bonds, debt, you're always going to be poor. I tested it. I tried it. Didn't work for me, and I doubt if it's going to work for you. Now listen to some more of the story. It says, Leroy Bush has lived here all of his life, picking cotton and working odd jobs to make ends meet. A decade ago, he became a homeowner. In exchange for 500 hours worth of sweat equity and a promise to pay $100 a month on an interest-free mortgage that covers the cost of the land, insurance, and materials, the labor was free. Everybody here is just trying to make it, said Bush, 55, who works with his wife, Claritha, at a nearby casino. We do the best we can. The human faces of poverty for many Americans are the inner-city homeless who sleep on grates, beg on corners, and line up mornings and afternoons at local parks for a cup of soup and a sandwich. But the 50 counties with the highest child poverty rates, 48, are in rural America compared with the urban areas. Unemployment is typically higher, education poorer, services severely limited because people are so spread out. Now look at this. Education is poor. How much poor education can you have in sixth grade or third grade? You know, education is not the determining factor in making money. It is not the determining factor in being poverty-stricken. Frank Rocha never spent a day in school. I have known many men who were totally illiterate. Frank Rocha, when he went to write you a check, had to have you write it out. He couldn't write. You had to write the check out, and he'd sign it. He couldn't read. He couldn't write. He couldn't, you know, he could add and subtract in his head. But he was not a dummy. The guy had good street sense. The guy could add and subtract. He just couldn't write and do numbers like you learned in school when you got letters. But he made $1 million, and he started with $5 in his pocket. He was abjectly poor. I got to tell you a little story here because I mentioned it last night. I don't know if you heard any or part of it, but there was a Vietnamese guy, and I reported this some months back. I think it was this year. It'll be on the archives there somewhere. He was from Vietnam, got on the boat. He was one of the boat people, 1975. He couldn't get to the United States. He got to the Philippines. He went to the Philippines from Vietnam, and he toughed it out there for about 5 years. Finally, he got to the United States. I'm not sure quite how he did it, but he got to the United States. And he had a cousin or a relative here in the United States, and he went to work for him in his donut shop. I think it was in Atlanta, Georgia. He slept in a room. Him and his wife slept in a room in the back of this donut shop, and they did this for about 3 to 5 years. I forgot exactly how long it was now. And then he saved his money. He ate in the donut shop. They took their showers out of a pan. They washed their bodies out of a pan. Went to the bathroom and the public restroom in the shopping mall, and did that for 4 or 5 years. Saved all of their money working for minimum wage. Minimum wage. Whatever that was back in the 70s and 80s. And then saved their money, $5,000, bought the bakery from the cousin who retired, paid him $30,000 for it, and went on. And today, those people are wealthy people. By, you know, they're just good, comfortable, middle-class people. I don't know if he's got $50 million like Donald Trump, but he's, you know, he's got a bakery, a donut shop. It's in a shopping mall. He owns a house, and he's got a car. But when, in 1975... He wasn't even a citizen. He couldn't speak the language here. Now listen, all of you people down there in the poor counties of South Mississippi, you speak the language, number one. You're educated to some degree. I mean, you can walk and talk and chew gum. Can you add and subtract at all? Can you add 300 and 200 and come up with 500? Can you make change and do change with money? Now, you people have automobiles, don't you? I don't know of any poor people that don't have automobiles. You've got money for gasoline. You got money for television. You've all got TVs. You've got electricity in your houses, don't you? Now, you know, my wife, from 69 to 72, didn't have electricity or indoor plumbing. I mean, there was no indoor plumbing. They had a well, and they had to carry the water in the house. And I'm not talking about 1875. I'm talking about 1969 to 72. She was educated in the Chicago school system. Now, come on, guys. You know, if you want to do something, there's an old adage that says you got to work for it. And Americans don't want to work. That's what the bottom line is. And that's why major companies in America are exporting your jobs. There are people in America who want to come to the office to BS and drink water at the water cooler, and then there are people over in India that want to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and work 8, 16, 20 hours, if that's what it takes, for $2 an hour, if that's what they can get. And they're happy to do it. And you're sitting there saying, well, I'm going to cry in my beer, and I don't think I can make it. Now, it is true. I think that this exporting of America's jobs is a bad national policy. But I read a book one time called The Richest Man in Babylon. I'm going to give you that book right now. I think everybody ought to read this. And it's written by a guy named George Clason. George S. Clason, called The Richest Man in Babylon. That's been published here for many, many years. You can probably buy it in any bookstore. They can order it for you. This one comes from Bantam Books, Toronto, New York, London, Sydney, Auckland. It was published in 1982, 82, 83, 84, 85. First published back about, 1926, 1930, 31, 32. It's reported to be a story about some clay tablets dug up in Babylon, and it deals with a lot of things in here, and one of the things that it deals with is work is my friend. There's a story in here that talks about work is my friend. And this guy is a slave, and he's working on the outer walls of the city of Babylon, which is the worst place that you can work as a slave because they work those slaves to death. But this guy, he says, well, if I stay here for 90 days, I'll be a dead man. So what he did was he went to work, and he worked harder than anybody around him. I mean, he wasn't dogging it at all. He got right out there and worked. The slave master looked at this one slave out of his work gang, and he said, wait a minute, I've got a racehorse here. This guy's very valuable. I'm not going to work this guy to death. I'm going to sell him. So he told his supervisor, who told the supervisor, who finally sold this guy at public auction to a baker. He worked for the baker for about 5 years or 10 or something like that. And he came to his master and he said, listen, master, am I a pretty good worker? Yeah. You like me? Yeah. If I go out and work on my spare time after hours and I make hot cross buns and I go out and sell them to the workers, can I have half of the profits that I make? And his master said, certainly, go out and do it. Well, some years go by, 5 years or 10, something like that. He comes to his master, he says, hey, listen, what do you think I'm worth? And his master says, oh, I think you're worth X number of dollars. And he said, am I for sale? And he said, sure. If anybody could come in here with the cash money, put it on the table and say, I want to buy you, I'd sell you in a heartbeat. And the slave looked at his master, whips out his bag, and he says, deal's done. I want to buy my freedom. And that's the story that says, work is my friend. This guy bought his freedom. The story opens with two guys sitting on their horses, and they're watching a caravan go by. One of them is a teenage punk kid, and the other one is an old man. And the teenage punk kid doesn't want to work. He just wants to go out and snort coke and play the parties, lay the girls. And the old man says, you know, your dad is a hard worker. And he says, yeah, he's a fool for working hard, because by working hard over here, he's missing the brass ring. Why, he should be out spending money and having parties and having a good time. And the old man said, well, your daddy was a slave. And the kid was shocked. He said, no, not my dad. My dad was never a slave. And this old man is standing there and says, oh, yeah? Yeah, your dad was a slave. I know, because I was associated with him. I don't know if he was a slave with him, 50 years before or something like that. So he goes on to tell him how this work is my friend. Now I'm gonna pass this on to you, called The Richest Man in Babylon, George S. Clason. I think that'll be a place for you to start. And I recommend about 6 or 8 books, and that's part of your education here at the law school. But let me in this first segment here, tell you a little story. People come here all the time, and I've seen many, many people, millionaires, walk in my door who have debts like Donald Trump just filed for bankruptcy. Here's a guy worth millions of dollars. Isn't he? Millions of dollars. And yet, the guy just had to file for bankruptcy on his casinos because they're not profitable. They're not making money. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, my goodness, Donald Trump. Listen, let me tell you another one. You know Ted Turner? Well, Ted Turner was worth $10 billion. $10 billion. That's $10,000 million. He lost 8 of it. The AOL Time Warner deal didn't pan out very well. He was being interviewed by Charlie Rose the other day, and he'd lost some money. $8 billion. Well, he'll struggle through life with the $2 billion he's got left over. But here's the moral to the story. Just because people have lots of money doesn't mean that they're financially solvent or financially stable and can pay all of their bills. In fact, just the opposite is true. Oftentimes you'll find people with lots of money who can't pay their bills and their checks bounce. And I'll tell you about one of those when we come back with the next segment right after this. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School. of Isabella, Missouri. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child in the world. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export all right, but then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2,000 population reduction program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. I can remember back in 1940 when we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. A year. Today we have a 3-day food supply in our refrigerators and believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. Now, over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. I don't think that's very wise. And these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. So says the Club of Rome. Now, you know, these evil madmen with their global 2,000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. And then let you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now and order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. My subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org and click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about poverty. What causes it? The cause of poverty is the violation of the 15 or 16 economic laws contained in the Bible. For instance, did you know that God instructed us not to pay interest or usury and not to charge it? Most people are out here just buying, selling, and trading. They've all got credit cards. And they're out here buying, selling, and trading with unjust weights and balances, a violation of Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. And they're involved in credit, and they don't want to work. The book of Proverbs has a lot to say about people that go surety from one another and end up in poverty. That's where you go out and sign for somebody to buy something. You extend your credit for somebody else, and then they screw you over and don't pay the bill, and you have to or lose your credit. And then there's people that don't want to work. You know, a little folding of the hands and a little sleep, and surely shall your poverty come upon you. The book of Proverbs is replete with stories about surety, poverty, poor. It's also the story about the rich, the powerful, the prosperous. What's the difference or the distinction between the two? It's these 16 economic laws. That's the difference. Let me share a couple of stories with you. I had a guy here one time. He was a laser physicist from Alamogordo, New Mexico. And he is one of 30 laser physicists in the world in 1986, 87, long in there. Only 30 of these guys in the world. He worked for the University of California at Berkeley. He had a security clearance that would get him into Hangar 54. That's more than President Bush has got. And he was making pretty good money, about $80,000 a year. Now, back in 86, 80 grand a year is pretty good bread. Not quite enough. I would suggest that he needed to make $100,000 a year, but you know, it was a little better then. $80,000 then would buy what $100,000 does now. Well, he went to school here, and he had a business problem. He'd bought a house, and he was unable to make the payments. And if he files for bankruptcy, he's going to lose his security clearance, and he'll lose his job with the university. So with this guy, it's pretty important. But I want to point something out. Here's a man who has got letters after his name, degrees. He's a laser physicist. He's the top in his field. Only 30 of these guys exist on planet Earth. In fact, this guy's got such a high security clearance and is so important. He came here in a motorhome with an armed guard with him. That's right. And this guy had to call in on his cell phone twice a day. We'd be here in the middle of the day, and he'd say, well, it's 2 o'clock. I got to go up to the top of the hill. We had to schedule a class around his going to the top of the hill because the cell phone wouldn't work down here where we're located. He had to go up to where the cell phone worked and called in case the Russians kidnapped him. And he was only making $80,000 a year, couldn't make ends meet, and he needed some business advice. He didn't have a legal problem per se. He had a numbers problem. He couldn't add and subtract, maintain his credit cards. He was in debt. He'd been out borrowing. He came to school here. We solved his problem for him. Second guy I want to tell you about is a guy named Larry Flint. You ever heard of him? Hustler Magazine? Well, Larry Flint, back in the early 80s, was having a little problem with a guy by the name of John DeLorean. DeLorean had been arrested, you know, for, I know, drugs, smuggling cocaine. And Larry Flint was involved in the case, and Flint didn't want to testify against his friend DeLorean, and the lawyers down there couldn't help him, and so he called barristers in. We were in Boise, Idaho at that time, and so on down to Southern California. I was really impressed. I had a bedroom to myself, and in the bedroom there was a bathroom, and in the bathroom was a shower. The shower was 14 feet long and had a shower head at each end, had a bench on each side of it, and it was about 7 feet wide. 7 feet wide, 14 feet long. My God, I've seen houses with bedrooms that weren't that big. That was the shower. That was the shower in the guest room, and I was one of the guests. Well, I was pretty impressed. It was a mansion in Bel Air, and when they came out to the airport, they picked me up with a limousine. They called me in Boise and said, well, what kind of whiskey do you drink? And I said, Jack Daniels. And when I got in the limousine, the chauffeur said, here's the Jack Daniels whiskey and here's the ice and here are the snacks, you know. He asked me what kind of snacks. And I said, well, I like potato chips, chips and onion dip. So I was riding out to the mansion, eating potato chips, onion dip, and sipping on Jack Daniels sipping whiskey in Larry Flint's limousine. And that's just one of them. He had three or four. Sent one out the airport, picked me up. That's pretty impressive. Furthermore, as I was there, I went down, I was a couple of trips, and I think I was there about a week each time. And I learned that Hustler Magazine made $12 million a month. Woo! Boy, was I impressed. $12 million a month, and this guy, Larry Flint's the head of this Hustler Magazine Corporation. That's $144 million a year. $144 million a year. That's the richest man I ever rubbed elbows with. I never have talked to anybody in my life that makes $144 million a year. I shook his hand, talked to him over the dinner table, sat down and counseled him over his business and his legal problems. Boy, was I impressed. Well, I had a little fee, and the fee was $10,000. $10,000. And Larry paid it, wrote me a check. Put the check in my pocket and went on back home. I was back in the days before I had any smarts, and I was still dealing in checks and credit cards and commercial paper. I used to be in the commercial world. I used to be out here in a chairman and CEO of a small corporation. You know, nothing big, but we produced about $1 million a year, had 30 employees. I'm familiar with the conventional business world. I know how the world works. I'm not ignorant there. I got home and I gave the check to my secretary, who went up to the bank to cash it, and the check bounced. So I told the secretary, I said, now listen, you hang on to that check and you call his bank, and the minute that the bank has the money, you run up and deposit the check and see if you can get that check through. And she did, and she went up and she deposited the check, and it bounced a second time. Now, when a check bounces twice, you can't redeposit it. That was the old rule. I don't know, I guess it's still the same. I haven't had a checking account for 30 years now, but in those days, twice was the limit. And so I was kind of in a quandary there. I said, well, maybe this guy's going to stiff me. I don't know. I got on the phone and I called Mr. Flint, and when his secretary heard it was me, why, she put him right on the phone. Yeah, Mr. Gordon, how are you? And we chit-chatted a little bit, and I said, gee, Larry, I hate to bring this to your attention, but that check you gave me, I I put it in the bank and it bounced. And he said, well, that could happen. Put it in a second time. I said, I did. It bounced twice. And he was really apologetic, and he was just did everything, bent over backwards. He said, I'm really embarrassed, and I'm really sorry that this happened. And he said, return that check immediately, and I'll cut you a new check, and I promise this is gonna, it'll be good. So I sent him the check back, and sure enough, we got another check, and the second check was good, and it cleared. But here's the moral to the story. Here's a man making $144 million a year, $12 million a month, lives in a Bel Air mansion with a shower in a guest room that's 7 by 14 feet, with a shower head at each end. And a crummy $10,000 check bounces not once but twice. You know, the reality of my experience over the years is just because people are running around in nice cars and big houses doesn't mean they got a lot of money. They're scrambling to make ends meet. They're scrambling to make their payments, just like you plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. And I mean nearly everybody I know. I've been in the houses of a lot of rich men. I mean people that have $1 million, $2 million, $3 million houses. And those guys have financial statements and they're running businesses. And they've got lots of employees. Some of them will have 100 or 200 employees. Now, I've only known a couple of three guys that have 100 employees. Most of them will have 30, 50, or 75. When you get up to 100 employees, you're talking about big business. And Larry Flint was one of those big business. I mean, he's got more than 100 employees. But the check didn't clear. Frank Rocha, remember that immigrant from the Azores, that old farmer, the man that said to me, if you went to Portugal, you'd starve to death. He was right. If I went to Portugal, I'd starve to death. Frank Rocha, when he wrote his check and put his name on it, never bounced a check. Didn't have $144 million, but he had a million. And then his checks didn't bounce. And that's because he knew how to manage his money a little bit better. He didn't pay interest and usury. He was dealing in commercial paper, but he wasn't violating all the laws, and he didn't deal in credit. And that's a pretty important factor. Besides that, he worked hard. Now, here's another thing I want to share with you, and that is I have never met a wealthy man that wasn't a hard worker. I don't know of any. That Larry Flint, let me tell you how this guy worked. From the time he got up in the morning at 6 o'clock until he went to bed at 11, 12, or 1 o'clock every night, he was working. He was in a wheelchair, but he was working. He was interviewing girls for the centerfold. He was interviewing me. He was interviewing lawyers, businesses, advertising people. I mean, his day was jam-packed. That guy worked 18, 20 hours a day, every day. I never saw a day that guy wasn't working. I had, this guy brought me down there, and I'm getting paid, and I'm not even talking to him. I'm over here in the corner. I had to have an appointment. I got my appointment with Larry Flint at 11:25 one night. 11:25. And I got about 30 minutes with him. And he said, well, I got my next appointment. We'll talk again. I'll schedule in as soon as I can, see Julie, my scheduling secretary, and to see when we can get back together. Now, that's something that's missing in America. Americans want to watch television. Americans want to play golf. They want to go out to the ball game. And they don't think anything about spending $50 for a baseball ticket to go to the ball games. And they'll sit there and drink beer at $3 or $4 a bottle, for crying out loud, while they're cheering their team on. There's no money in that. Those people never achieve financial success and independence. And those that do achieve financial success and independence are in almost every case in debt up over their eyeballs. Yeah, they live well. But then, I used to live well too as a general contractor, and I went broke three times. That's before I woke up and started practicing the Mosaic Law. Now, hang on, we'll be back in this last segment. Let me tell you something about how to make it and how to make it big. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week. here over North America and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, just go to the law web page. I'll get it out. Hang on here. Please go to the web page. It's georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. All right. We've been talking here about business and poverty. Reading from an article here from the Agribusiness Examiner. The nation's rising young rural poor seen in Mississippi Delta. There is a cause and effect relationship. You've got these college professors with PhDs. They go down there and they say, gosh, look at all these poor people down here. Well, we don't know what causes this poverty, but I'll tell you what, we'll categorize it, write books about it, and we'll tell these people to feel real sorry for themselves, and it's probably the white man that's causing their problems. So let me tell you a little story here. Poverty is caused by lawlessness. Lawlessness, the violation of the basic laws of economics, like thou shalt not steal. The systematic methodology of gaining property is done by geometric progression. That is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. What we're doing in this country and what we've been encouraged to do is to practice labor, income, equitable interests, with overtime, time and a half, hourly wages being discharged instead of paid. We're taught that we want workers' comp so that we can pay the income tax and Social Security to pay for it, and we wonder why it is we're poor. The biblical system is predicated upon strict liability. That's no insurance. Everybody's responsible for himself. The tithing system instead of income tax. Just weights and measures. That's gold and silver coin instead of checks, negotiable instruments. Thou shalt not steal in place of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. In place of usury, which is what's practiced in America, and we're all encouraged to get credit cards to make our purchases and pay interest on them. Then we're taught that work is bad for us and we ought not to work. What we want to do is stand around the water cooler, shoot the breeze in an air-conditioned office without any production and to collect a lot of money. And then we get real upset when these companies outsource our jobs to India where people want to work. Wages require payment. American workers are not paid. They're discharged in equity. And then we don't practice the hired servant statutes of the scriptures. Hired servants have to be paid at the end of every day. We're not paid at the end of every day. In fact, let me give you a little illustration. You people all get vacation pay, don't you? Vacation pay. Think of that. The boss saves up your money for a year, 50 weeks, and then gives it to you in one lump sum. But he's had that money for 50 weeks, and he's been using it interest-free. Now, had we been practicing the tithing system in this country, we'd have first tithe, second tithe, and third tithe. Second tithe is your vacation pay. Second tithe is for the purposes of going to the Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, Feast of Tabernacles, the Day of Atonement, Last Great Day, the seven annual holy days. Instead of practicing the Sabbaths and the holy days, we Americans practice Christmas, Easter, and New Year's. Now think of it. We're practicing Christmas, Easter, and New Year's instead of practicing the biblical Sabbaths. We practice from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, in place of property and property rights. We are a nation of practicing communists because the second plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. The eighth plank calls for Social Security. The fifth plank calls for a central bank. And the central bank gives us unjust weights and balances instead of gold and silver. Can you point to any country in the world practicing communism? Let's try Russia, China, Cuba. Can you point to a country in the world practicing communism in which the people of that nation are blessed, the people of that nation are wealthy and prosperous? You know, I can't think of any. But in the United States and the Anglo-Saxon nations of Western Europe, when we practiced the Ten Commandments, when we, Americans and Britons and French and Dutch and Belgians and so on, when we practiced gold coin in all of those Anglo-Saxon countries, I mean the Austrians, the Germans, the French, the Belgians, the Dutch, the British, the Danes, the Americans, the Canadians, we all used to practice gold and silver coin. And when we did, our nations prospered, and we all had the highest standard of living in the world without debt. Now listen to this. Take a look at where we are in America today. I got a little book here called Astounding Averages. Here on page 14 of Astounding Averages. In 1990, the average monthly mortgage payment was $1,127, or 32.8% of household income. In 1927, you couldn't get a mortgage longer than 7 years. It was Franklin Roosevelt that extended it to 10. And the 7 years and $7,000 was what a house cost on average, generally speaking, in 1927. 7 years to pay for it, and people paid those mortgages off, and they weren't paying 32% of their household income. Now, let's take a look at number 21, 22, 24. But it's nice to know it's there if you need it. Now, let's take number 21. This is called insurance. The average American household or family from 1982 to 92 spent $8,910 on auto insurance, but filed only one claim, averaging $600. Think of that. Here's the Bible. Here's God. Comes along and says, don't practice limited liability. Practice strict liability. If we practice strict liability, then on average, over 10 years, you would pay $600, $60 a year. But because you want to practice limited liability, you don't want to be responsible for your actions, you're paying $900 a year. You know, that $900 a year, plus those $1,100 a month payments, plus that interest on the credit cards, plus Social Security, plus the income tax, you know, you add those 14 taxes up, is it any wonder that Americans are now poverty-stricken with $149 trillion worth of debt, both public and private? You know, when we practiced the law of God, we had lots of money. We Americans had the highest standard of living in the world. The average smoker spends $750 a year on cigarettes. Cigarettes and cigarette smoking. It's just a practice of witchcraft. Cost you about $750 a year. And here's the important thing. It takes money to make money. You know, if you had a stake, let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose that I came to you and I said, I will pay you a dollar if you will work for me this year, 365 days. I'll pay you one whole dollar. Next year, I will pay you two whole dollars, and the year after, four whole dollars. And we'll do that for the next 32 years. What would you think of that? What if I said to you, I'll give you a choice. I will pay you $50 an hour for every hour you work, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 250 days a year for the next 32 years. Or I will give you $1. Double it to $2 next year, $4 the year after, and we'll do that for 32 years. Which would you pick? Common sense would tell you, $50 an hour. Let's get it now. Now, go get your Texas Instrument calculator out and take a dollar, multiply it to 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. Do that 32 times and you'll come up with $40 million. That's $40 million in 32 years. In fact, it's a little over that. Quite a bit over that. $50 an hour will pay you wages. It'll pay you good wages. No doubt about it. I mean, you're making good money, $100,000 a year, every year for 32 years. But you won't make anywhere near as much as you would in geometric progression. Now, let me share a little secret with you. Everybody who makes big money makes it in geometric progression. But wage earners work in arithmetic progression. When they hire you to drive truck, they're paying you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The way to make money, the way Donald Trump or Ted Turner makes money, it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. Now, I teach a school on business. And I use the scriptural law, those laws that God gave us out at Mount Sinai, like thou shalt not steal. The basis of personal property rights is thou shalt not steal. And we have a couple other statutes in here like usury. You're not to charge usury or pay it. Credit. Credit business is bad business. Credit business is bad business. When you borrow money and go into debt to pay for things that you ought to wait for so that you can pay cash, or when you go out and buy a car and you buy it on time, you know, the ads say, we'll give you $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 cash back. Did you think those people are just so concerned about you? They just can't wait to give you money? You think they're dumb? Don't you think that those people that are making those loans, selling those cars, and have that money? I mean, you don't have $20,000 to go plunk down on a car. But these car companies and banks have cars to give you $4,000 to sign the contract and buy it and pay them $500 a month, don't they? Well, don't you think that they're getting that $5,000 back or $4,000, whatever they're advancing, plus interest? Now, if you take $1,000, put it in the bank at 5% interest compounded annually, just compounded annually, it doubles under the rule of 72 in 14.7 years. If you want to see how fast it doubles, take 10%. 7.2 years it doubles. You go out and buy a car at 14% interest and finance it for 5 years, you're buying one car for you and one for the finance company. You buy a house and you pay 7% interest for 30 years, you're buying one house for you and two houses for the bank. Now, you got to be pretty wealthy, you know that, to go out and buy one house for you and two for the bank. It's no wonder that people in America are suffering from poverty because we practice communism. Now listen, I got one more program this week. Tomorrow night, I'm going to show you what the business principles are that come from the Bible. About 80 business principles, and I'll go through and I'll show you why it is as we progress along. The people that practice the biblical laws concerning economics get rich. Abraham had $175 million in today's terms. He passed that on to Isaac, who in turn passed it on to Jacob, and Jacob stole it from his brother Esau, and he was a self-made millionaire. He was a self-made millionaire. Everybody in the scripture, Joseph, Daniel, were rich people. These people had lots of money. The Messiah had lots of money. Joseph of Arimathea had lots of money. I don't know how much he had, but he had a bunch. All right, that's tomorrow night about this time. I'm just about out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off right here. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. Says our time is up. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, goodbye, friends.